Welcome to the Lame Podcast, very first episode of Lame Podcast, where my friends and I laugh at our experiences in life, and hopefully you laugh and learn from our mistakes. Now, this episode is very special for me because it's my very first one, and it would not be possible for me to do this if I did not have this very special guest. I've grew up with her since, high school, and I've adopted her into my family because I've learned throughout the years that, you know, sometimes blood isn't always thicker than water, and it's not the family that you have, but the family that you create. So Ariel's been a part of my life since I was about 14 or 15 years old, but it feels like an entire lifetime. The world knows her as Big Swole, but I know her as KJ, Little Sierra, the Beyonce of the group, my sister from another mister, Ariel Johnson.
Not the KJ.
Oh, yeah. Had to bring it back. All right. So, Ariel, we're going to tap into your past and the world of dance. Let's start from the beginning. Did you have any formal training growing up?
No, I didn't have any formal training. It was mostly just what I see, and then I tried to emulate it as best as possible.
Yeah. Nice. Who were the people that you looked up to as a kid, I guess, in the world of dance?
Oh, man, Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson, Paula Abdul, like they just killed it. They just, every single time, Gregory Hines, like every time I would see them work or see their movements, it just inspired me to want to, you know, shake a little something.
Now, is that something that you aspired to be as far as a career? What was your, like, I guess when we grow up, they're asking us as kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? Or what career would you want to have? Would that be dance per se or like a choreographer?
Oh, yeah. I was definitely heading the direction of choreographer. I wanted to actually do a double major, pre-law and dance.
Pre-law and dance.
I know, right? Regular whole like Chicago type stuff.
And when did you start like choreographing? Was it something like you did in school, like talent shows? Or was it something you just did with the kids in the neighborhood? How'd you get started in that?
Well, it started in the neighborhood in Wood Valley. There was this woman who we had like a crazy boot crew. And we had like stepping and everything and had all these types of dances she would just teach us. And that's where the love kind of started. And then once I found out about talent shows, that was pretty much it. I was like, oh, I get to choreograph my own little number and, you know, performing in front of everybody. I'm down.
And what would you say is like one of the artists that you looked up to the most as like, okay, I see what that person's doing. I got to do exactly that to get to that level.
I would say, honestly, Aaliyah. I liked how she carried herself first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And that was just something that I was like, oh, that's different than what I'm seeing, you know, everybody else is doing. So I was like, oh, I like the way she dances. I like the way she presents herself. So,
yeah, because I know, like, especially nowadays, it's very provocative mm-hmm. sexualization of artists, specifically females. And I see kids nowadays, you know, the TikTok generation and the YouTube and Instagram generation, like they look at that and emulate that. I know growing up, we couldn't do that. You know, that wasn't even allowed to be aired on television. So it's like, I think Aaliyah is a great role model because she had this street but sweet demeanor and she had that level of confidence, but there was that sexiness to her, but she didn't let that kind of overpower her artistry. Like she kind of gave it to you without doing the most.
It was just naturally there.
Yeah. Speaking of high school talent show performances, people don't know this at home. We performed in high school talent shows together. And
plenty of times.
And her dad has every single one that we did somewhere on tape. Mm-hmm. For me, I'll be honest with you guys. I have very bad stage fright. People don't know that. Like, what? I have very bad stage fright because one bad look in the audience or someone that's just not like giving you any type of emotion or feedback, I tense up because I feel like I'm doing a bad job. They're not feeling what I'm doing. So I would try to look out for her father in the audience because I know he would be like positive, probably smiling or something that would kind of get my mind out of that funk of being perfect. So I don't know if you're allowed to release any of that stuff online.
Oh, yeah. No, that stuff is fine.
People don't know that you were a dancer. They don't. No. And I remember, I think this is how I met you. This had to be, I think, I want to say starting my junior year, And that's when Sierra was like hot. She first came out, like all the girls wanted to be like her because, you know, unfortunately we lost Aaliyah, and there wasn't, no disrespect to Beyonce, but there wasn't something out there that was different that we haven't seen before. And when Sierra came out, like she kind of gave you all of that in one. But going back to what I was saying, Ariel was able to do this dance move that I don't have the proper insurance for, still don't. You know, she did this thing called the Matrix, which was Sierra's signature move. And she could do that effortlessly. And I was like, yo, I got to hang out with this girl. I have to hang out with this girl because like that is so cool. Being very introverted, it was very difficult for me to make friends in school that kind of had the same things in common with myself. Like a lot of people at school didn't dance, so I kind of kept it to myself. It was like a hidden talent. But meeting Ariel, she allowed me to break out of that. You know, I call it the Steve to Stefan Urkel breakout moment, because people didn't know I could dance because I never had a platform to do it. They had a dance team at school, but, you know, it wasn't really to the caliber of what.
Let me just say it was whack. It was whack.
No disrespect to Clearwater High School. I love y'all.
Yeah, yeah. No disrespect, but it was whack.
It wasn't up to the caliber of what I saw on TV. Right. I'll say that much. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. But yeah, I was very introverted and I was very shy. And Ariel was the one person that really broke me out of that shyness and broke me out of that, you know, always having to do the right thing. I kind of had a little moment of rebelliousness because of her. Only time I skipped school was with her. I did get in trouble, but hey, it was worth it. I was a senior. Hey, whatever. I don't care.
Don't talk about Fight Club. But
no, but going back to, you know, how we met, like she could do this Matrix dance move. And I was like, yo, who is this chick? Because no, the other girls couldn't do that. Like, you know, the girls in the neighborhood, they would do like the little, you know, what do we call it? The little trendy dances at the time. But this Matrix thing, nobody was touching Ariel on it. And then like I would see her like battle dudes. I'm like, who is this girl? She was like a freaking Power Ranger, for real. I'm like, I need to be her friend, you know? And just somehow it just happened by the grace of God. And we were like tight as glue. And I don't know. It's just she's always been a part of my life since then, because she kind of gave me something I always wanted in life. You know, I'm the oldest out of my siblings. I didn't have anybody close in age to relate with at all. You know, there's a 5 to 12 year gap between me and my other siblings, and Ariel was like God sent to me. So, you know, I remember my mom meeting her. We were at, oh God, I'm telling all my business. We were at this girl named Jessie. She had a little house party, and you know, we were litty titty, you know,
litty titty.
And my mom comes to pick me up, but I wasn't ready to go home. So one of the classmates, like, I'll drive home afterwards. And she sees Ariel laid out on the floor. And she was like, oh, she flighty. Who is that one? So my mom to this day calls her flighty. Yeah. But I mean, hey, I mean.
It's all right. Flighty. Dad calls me Tigger. Just bouncing off all the walls and stuff.
I mean, it fits you. Yeah. But yeah, Ariel has been that one person, I think, for me, really helped me see more of myself. She gave me a reason to not be afraid to be me. And, you know, a lot of kids growing up, you know, they, I was a nerd. I'll be honest with you. I was a geek because that's all I had going for me. I couldn't be the neighborhood dope boy. I couldn't be the all-American jock. You know, all I had was school. That was all I had. Growing up in a predominantly black neighborhood, going to a predominantly white school, the black kids didn't like me because I was too smart. So, you know, you being called white boy, you know, either you're too black for the white kids or too white for the black kids. So I never fit in. But Ariel kind of didn't.
American. Yeah, more Mexican than the Mexicans.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's exhausting.
Oh, but yeah, she has been a champion for me and been my dance partner. Speaking of the talent show, there is something in particular that I think I got you in trouble for. There's two incidences. Mm-mm. The first one was when your parents found the lyrics for Janet Jackson's Suicided printed in your room.
Yeah.
There was this lip sync contest, so Ariel had to be Janet. And, of course, she had to learn the lyrics to the song. So, of course, she's, what, 16, 17. And back then, we didn't have phones where we can just, you know, look at the lyrics. We had to print them out.
Print them out from the computer.
So, you know, being the great parents that she has, they, you know, I guess they were cleaning up her room or something, and they found the lyrics to the song called So Excited. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the lyrics, they're very sexually explicit in content that a 17-year-old shouldn't be saying. So, I mean, we still did the song.
I mean, yeah.
And we won.
Yeah, I had to explain it to him. Like, look, listen. I'm trying to win, all right? I don't care what this song is saying. I'm just trying to win.
But, yeah, that was something I kind of, I mean, I took the blame for it. But, hey, we kicked butt because we never would win anything. Like, there was always something.
Oh, yeah.
They, to
we
some
were
type
slighted
of.
Slighted every single.
We got Simon
show.
Cowled all the time.
Every time.
And it was like some stupid technicality or just one of the judges. I don't know what it was, but we could never win for anything. Yeah. But this one time, she does one of these songs that, you know, you shouldn't be saying that, you know, high schoolers. We end up winning, so I'll take the blame for that one. Yeah. But speaking of other trouble we got into, do you remember the time where I think we skipped school?
I know exactly what time you're talking about. It's only cold times I really got in trouble.
We skipped school to go to a dance audition.
Yes.
You were supposed to take the bus back home.
And stay home.
And stay home. But one of our friends like, I'll drive y'all to St. Pete. And, you know, back then, anytime we hear audition, we're like, what? Because we don't have those opportunities where we're from. Clearwater, St. Pete, Largo, Tampa really didn't have any type of platform for people to, I guess, do the caliber of dance you would see either in L.A. or New York. So we thought, like, hey, this is it. You know, this was during the era of, like, the You Got Served and all that stuff and all the popular dance shows, like America's Best Dance Crew, like, all that stuff.
Yeah, So You Think You Can Dance was popping.
So we're like, hey, we in it, you know, but it was cut into our school time. And I took the bus home, you know, but my mom, you know, pretty much was working all the time, so I pretty much was independent. So I just got home whenever. But Ariel, like, she had a strict schedule. You take the bus home and you stay home.
Yeah.
But nope. We went to the audition, and as soon as we about to leave, guess who walks through the doors?
Man, my dad.
Tony.
Oh, man. I just knew it. I was like, oh, here we go. My life. This is it. It was worth it. Killed the audition. But, man. Luckily, you know, I didn't get like a whooping or anything, you know, but
true.
Definitely got at the sternest talking to.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they ended up letting me be in a group anyway because they just didn't want to, you know, deter my future. But
good parents.
Good parents. But still at the same time, they're just like, look, you can't be disobedient. But we understand that you want to follow your dreams.
True. That is very true.
So they said it took guts to do it. So I guess that was like the saving grace for me.
At least they understood where you were coming from.
Yeah, they
were
understood. Yeah.
And they supported your dreams instead of like, well, no, you know.
Right.
You know, I understand certain parents want to protect their children, but there's certain instances where you kind of have to nurture the child no matter what it is. If you don't believe in it, just let them try it because you never know. You telling them no may kind of have them have resentment for you in the future.
Exactly.
But speaking of auditions, have you ever had a bad audition before?
Not necessarily a bad audition, but I did have an audition where I skipped out on it because I was so nervous. Had an audition for Alvin Ailey Dance Company. I know.
Wait.
I know.
You skipped out on an Alvin Ailey audition?
I went all the way in there, and I couldn't like grasp the concept of, all right, let me put this like tutu on and do this ballet and do these steps that you want me to do. I mean, I did them, you know, but when it was time to like pair off stuff, I was like, no, I feel like this is just not the right direction for me. I spoke to them afterwards and told them exactly who I was and everything because it was an invitation.
You got invited and you skipped out?
Well, I mean, you know, like I skipped out again in the last little bit. I was just like, I don't think this is for me. I just had like this overwhelming feeling of like this wasn't it. Like, that's happened to me on several occasions and several different opportunities that I've gotten to, like, expand in a different thing, like, with track and field, even, like, going to, like, the, you know, Olympics and stuff like that. And it's just, those avenues weren't for me.
Do you think the reason why you probably skipped out was because of you not having any formal training?
I believe so. Like, you know, sometimes you feel like you're less than because you haven't been as privileged as others, so you haven't been blessed to be able to, you know, afford, you know, training or anything, or rather like the tapes or anything so you can watch them so you can, you know, mimic or anything. Sometimes it is overwhelming. Like, it's an overwhelming feeling of, like, defeat already before you even step into the room.
Because you feel intimidated by others that have had that opportunity.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's before, you know, you learn that you're not supposed to compare your gifts to others.
Preach, sister.
Yes. So they had certain gifts, and I have other gifts. I mean, you know, there's some of them that, you know, wish they could dance the way that I can dance, and vice versa.
But you have this natural, raw talent that, how do I say it? I wouldn't say I was envious. I'm just like, yo, I need whatever she drinking, whatever regimen she's on, because it's just like, you're a freaking Power Ranger when it comes to dance. It's like you morph into this other person, because Ariel, the person, and Ariel, the dancer, are two different people. Even Ariel, Big Swole, you can tap in and tap out these different facets of who you are as a whole. And it's remarkable to watch, to hear that you didn't have any training. Like, I'm from that same tribe. And I remember feeling the same way, less than, and intimidated by other trained dancers, which is why I kind of gave up on that dream, because I've had bad auditions. I had that same feeling you had. It wasn't on the level of Alvin Ailey, but I understood where you were coming from when you were telling me that, because it makes you feel like, damn, like, I missed out on so much, and now I have this great opportunity, but I don't feel personally prepared, because I don't feel confident within myself, because this is not my environment. I didn't grow up in this environment. You know, you kind of remind me of my friend Tish. She, you know, yeah, we'll talk. For those who don't know, Tish is Tish Oliver, one of Janet Jackson's dancers and choreographers, and she's been in so many videos. She was the girl doing that crazy back bend in Michael Jackson's Remember the Time. She was a dancer for BBD. She was a dancer for Bobby Brown, Guy, so many people. She was in SWV video, You're the One, so on and so on. But she didn't have any formal training. She was just a natural club kid, a freestyler. She had that raw talent, and Tina Landon, you know, took her upon her wing, and she was able to choreograph and dance for Janet just off her talent alone. She didn't have to audition, but she told me in conversation where when she was on tour, some of the other girls would kind of like tell her, you need to take class, or, you know, you need to teach something or teach class. And she was like, no, it's not my thing. Like, she didn't feel like she was good enough to, you know, be at that level of a technically trained dancer. So when you would see her on stage with Janet, you know, busting it and giving her all, it's because she was kind of proven to herself that she was worthy to be on that stage with other trained dancers. So, like, seeing you live out your dreams, it's really inspiring, and we need to hear more stories of those people who don't have that formal background but have successful and inspiring careers, because we're out here, but people don't believe it. They don't see it, you know, but we need to tell those stories.
Absolutely.
Speaking of Tina Landon, what was your experience like hanging out with her?
She's a dear. Oh man, she's so funny. you're not necessarily supposed to have idols or anything, but it was like, yeah, you meet one of your idols, people that you like, oh my goodness, I've followed your career, and you're still down to earth. And that brings me so much joy, because I guess I hear it from other people when they meet me. Oh, you're so down to earth. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm just myself.
Yeah.
But then, you know, remember instances where, you know, meeting Tina, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, you're so down to earth. You're so cool. Like, you're just yourself.
Very laid back, right?
Very laid back. Yeah, man, you know.
Because when I first met her, I was so scared of her.
Don't forget, you got to round up. You don't round up.
She's going to hear this. She's going to die laughing. No, when I first met her, I was so scared of her. Not like in a bad way, because it's Tina freaking Landon, you know?
Right.
If you don't know who she is, Google her. Then you know what I'm talking about.
You've seen that screen video.
Yeah, she has the credits, the accolades, and the awards. And an Emmy nomination, too. I think she has an Emmy for it, too. Anywho, Tina Landon, like, meeting her.
Right.
Meeting her, I was so intimidated, because I'm thinking she's just going to be all about business. But she was like, nah, come to my hotel room. Because, you know, I did a workshop for Janet and her dancers, and, you know, teaching the kids the choreography. And, you know, I had my first trial event in Florida. And, you know, I flew Tina from L.A. And she was like, well, yeah, come to my room. You know, we'll talk and stuff like that. So me, Ariel, Mike Andrews, one of Janet dancers, rest in peace.
Rest in peace, Mike.
And my friend Santos, we all hung out in Tina Landa's room for a couple hours. We, at the time when I was drinking, we all got litty titty, but it was awesome because we were just talking about life. It wasn't, tell me about Janet, tell me about Janet. It wasn't like a fan groupie type of thing. It was just like friends just hanging out laughing. And I don't know if she remembers this, but Tina, don't kill me. She ran into the wall a couple of times. Because she said she's very clumsy, but I didn't believe her. And she...
Boom.
Boom. Right? But
hey,
yeah.
All right?
Right? But it was just an amazing experience because you wouldn't think someone with that level of success would just be like a regular person. And, you know, she met my mom. She met my brother. Like, it was just a great experience to be around someone like that, that made you feel like you belong, you know? So that was awesome. But continue with your experience with Tina. I know that you actually got to take one of her classes, not once, but twice.
Yes. Oh, it's nothing like learning from the originator. Like, you can, like, take classes and be like, oh, yeah, you know, I worked on this. But when you're the choreographer, you're the person, the genius behind the moves, like, you know why this position is in this position and, you know, the feeling you're supposed to have, you know, like, in certain, like, counts and stuff like that. So it was just great, like, kind of like, you know, getting a peek into her mind and into her processes and stuff like that. It was just wonderful, like, to be around that level of genius and still see the humbleness,
yeah,
you know, and the humanness in her.
So yeah.
Great experience.
And a lot of people don't know Ariel was one of the first participants at my workshops. You know, I started the project about 5 years ago. I didn't have any type of experience. It's just I had an idea. And what I've always known is that everyone has great ideas, but it's how you execute them. So I did a couple of workshops. And Ariel got to participate. What was your experience being around legends and being around that environment that we grew up watching these people on TV?
It was fun. It was like I was a starstruck for sure, because in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, this person has met X, Y, and Z. I was like, so by proxy, you know, I have met. Like, I am in the presence of greatness here. Okay, it's like their spirits are upon me, and I'm finna kill this dance. It was just great.
What was one of your favorite numbers to learn?
Try Again, and That's the Way Love Goes. Cause it's just so smooth.
Mellow, you know? Right?
It's so smooth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the hardest routine for you to learn?
Hardest? You know, I'm going to go with If. Well, if we're going by the first one, I'm going to go with If. If we're going by overall, I'm going to go with Rhythm Nation, because the intricacies, man, I'm like.
Keeping your blade sharp.
Yeah. But I'm like, oh, okay. It's very militant. I was like, oh, I felt like I was back in Lackland Air Force Base or something.
Oh. That's awesome. Yeah, because people don't know. It's one thing learning it from the VHS tape and rewinding it, but there's so many different angles that you can learn from. But learning it from the actual choreographer and learning it through its entire message, its piece, but also the level of intricacy.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing like it. And once you learn it and understand how the moves were developed and the mindset and just being in an environment of the choreography, you'll get it, you know. But it's very challenging for someone who's never taken a dance class before, which is why I was proud of you and so many others, because there was a lot of other kids who were fans of Janet, but they wanted to learn the original choreography. So to kind of have them have little to no dance background and to be able to execute that level of detail within an hour and a half to 2 hours, right, it was remarkable.
And I did all that on the full stomach of Sweetie Pies.
You know what?
He was right next door across the street.
Yeah, Sweetie Pies, but
I also popped because Anthony is Powerline. I was in the back. Standing.
That's right. Yeah, Janet's choreographer for Rhythm Nation, he was also the choreographer for Disney's A Goofy Movie, Powerline, which was sung by Tevin Campbell, all those songs and stuff like that. Right. But the dance moves and the choreography came from Anthony. So I think everyone kind of lived out their Disney dreams.
Sure did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Especially when we went to dinner. I was like,
the crazy part about it is, for me, I still have to pinch myself because these were my heroes growing up, and just to have everything kind of come full circle, like, I never would have imagined that to happen, especially me, you know. So I never took that for granted, but I just felt like, geez, how lucky am I to, one, not only dream about working with these people, but actually work with these people. Yeah, like, I had to give all thanks to God, because I'm like, what happened? This wasn't a part of the plan, but I guess he had another plan for me. I'm going to take it back a little bit further and talk about our high school shenanigans.
Oh, Lord.
Starting with the penis game.
Listen, there was no shame in my game when it came to this penis game. I didn't care who was around.
Check this out. Somehow, Frick and Frack were in the same anatomy honors class, and we were the class clowns. Everyone else is studious. I mean, there was four of us, but Ariel and I were pretty much...
Time out. First of all, I'm not even supposed to be in this class. Let me tell y'all this. So, I was a manipulator. I'm a former manipulator, and now I just manipulate for the good of the human world. So I'm like, you know, Robin Hood, you know, with a Y. And so this class is really only for upperclassmen. I'm not supposed to be in it.
Wait, that's right. Because I was a senior. I'm like, how?
I'm supposed to be taking biology. You're supposed to take a biology before your 4 years is up. I did not do that. I said I'm going to take anatomy and physiology honors because it's an honors class and I'm intelligent and that's the class I want to be in. So I finagled my way into the class because I was like, look at all my good grades. Like, I got to get these bumps, these extra half credits for these honor classes. And they were like, oh, okay, cool. Da-da-da-da. I didn't even look at the paperwork or nothing. I just talked while they were doing their job so that they wouldn't look. And the next thing you know, I'm in the class. And I'm like the only 10th grader.
Wait.
No, like, well, yeah, or something. Wait, like that.
No, you're right.
Because like, you were in 11th grade in this class, right? I think so.
11th or 12th. What did I
think it was 11th.
Something like that. But
it was something like, because I was the exact same class where I lied to get out because all the upperclassmen had something to do that day. And I was upset because I couldn't go. And I wasn't going to be the last one in the class because then they'd know that I'm an underclassman in an upperclassman class.
You were a junior because I think this was my senior year. It had to be. I'm thinking of it because I had Allison Hackett in there. She's a junior.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, A. Hackett was in there. Valencia. Shane, there was someone else, Mark, because we had a group project to do. That's how I remember.
Yes, because this was the fourth year science, because you only needed three to graduate.
Yes.
I was like, it's something like that. Yes, yes. So I was taking a fourth year science in my third year as the end of my, you know.
And she finessed her way into the class. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But going back to the penis game, we'll be taking a test, right? And it'd be dead silent. All of a sudden, you hear, penis. Next person, penis. And then every time we would say the word, we had to say it a little bit louder.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, guess who got in trouble? I did.
Couldn't have been
us. No. You, I, and Valencia, and Shane. We were the troublemakers.
Yeah.
Mom, if she's hearing this right now, I'm just speaking my truth. I had fun because of Flighty. She allowed me to be me. I love to laugh and be silly, but... You know, being the only black person in the class most of the times, I felt I didn't feel protected for one. I felt like I always had to be on edge. I always had to be perfect. Always had to do the right thing. Always had to watch what I said. Always had to watch what I did because I felt like I didn't have any allies. I didn't have anyone on my side. I'm being looked at because I'm the only one in here. So that made me feel uncomfortable.
You're the standard bearer for an entire race of people.
Yeah, and it was like I felt like I had to set a standard that I didn't know existed. But being in a class with Ariel, she allowed me to not think about that. And different people from different backgrounds of life was in that class. So I felt like, okay, I can be myself. I can be silly. And it was cool. I mean, we still did what we had to do. Mm-hmm. But we also had fun. We also would like say catchphrases from Mad TV.
Little boot scoop. A little boot scoot boogie.
For those who don't know, Mad TV was a popular sketch comedy show on Fox. In my opinion, it was much better than Saturday Night Live. I don't care what nobody said. Mad TV trumped SNL all day. Even the reruns still trump SNL to this day.
I'm not cute. I'm sexy.
But there were certain characters that we all loved. Like there was Lorraine. Miss Stewart and his mom, Doreen.
Stewart and his mom.
God, Stewart. What if mommy see my little boy?
But we would do this in class, and it'd be like dead silent. Once again, quiet, taking the test. All of a sudden, you hear,
Man, that teacher was tired.
Coach Scott hated us. Well, I bet we were his lit class.
Yeah, we were his favorite. He ended up telling me that we were his favorite.
I mean, we did things we weren't supposed to do. Like, we had the answers to a final that we weren't supposed to get.
You ain't supposed to say that out loud.
I mean,
we're going to do now. Yeah, we had the answers. We found the answers.
No. If you really want me to tell the truth, I'm not going to put Coach Scott on blast.
Right.
But let's just say there was a very attractive female in our class that was able to finesse and get in the answers. Because he had like this file cabinet. He had like a back office or something.
Yeah, it was a back office.
And it was a file cabinet full of, you know, the final questions and the answers. Yep. So while she be talking her stuff to him, finessing him, another one of the male students was able to go in the back.
This is bad.
I know, this is bad.
This is bad.
Children, I do not promote this. It's not bad. We're sharing our experiences and we're laughing about it. And you're learning from our mistakes. Do not do that.
Yes.
I mean, it was my senior year. It was a final. I done made the grades I was supposed to make. I done passed all the tests. I'm like, for once, can I get a break where I don't have to use my brain? And
homegirl was 18, though. Just to clarify. Yeah. It still don't make it right.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's morally wrong.
You know, but God answered my prayers. I was like, for once.
But we needed the final.
For real. I was like, I don't want to use my brain. And by the grace of God, the next day in class, yo, I got the answers for the final. It was like a secret. We couldn't say it out loud.
Yeah.
But we all, I don't know if we passed on to each other while we were taking the, I don't know how it happened, but
I knew the answers, though. I knew the answers. But this was just a fun way of going through and, you know, finishing the class.
Man. And also in that class, I found out Ariel had another alter ego named Sandy.
Oh,
who is Sandy?
Sandy is my friend. She comes out when, you know, she's my code switcher. Everybody has a code switch. I happen to name my code switch, and her name is Sandy.
For those who don't know what code switching is, please tell them the definition.
Okay, so code switching is when you're not among your own people and you're among others, or you're in a work environment or anything, and you need to switch up your voice and your speech patterns in order for them to completely understand you. You know, you have to speak in clearer, you know, American standard English instead of Ebonics or African-American vernacular English.
For example, on this podcast, my name is Rodney Jr. But at home, I'm Rodney. Shouty, what's up? There's a difference.
Hello, my name is Rachel.
Like at work, you know, you don't be like, yo, what's up, boss? How you doing? Right. You're like, good morning. How are you doing? You have a great day.
Exactly. I switched it up as I was explaining to you guys, you know, the definition of code switching.
So Sandy was your code switch character.
Yes, but okay. She was highly emotional, though. I had to give each one a little something, a little saison.
What do you mean highly emotional?
Well, when, like, I turned her on, and, like, sometimes it's an environment, like, we were in class, and I was bored. I just like have a BF.
What's like, a BF?
Speech fit.
You better get out of here.
You better get out of here. You know, like I mix in Sandy's with a little bit of white chicks, and it just it's comedic relief for me.
Oh, we're gonna get into comedic relief in movie quotes. I do want to touch on our concert shenanigans. I had this mentor in high school my freshman year, and he was the city manager of Clearwater. And he is, you know, African American, and for me, it was different to see black men with, I wouldn't say higher power, but it was just to see someone with that type of stature and career, and for him to be my mentor, I was like, why me? What makes me special? But I just got lucky. Anywho, they would have concerts for the city, you know, every, I think, what, spring and summer with the local radio station. And he would give me backstage passes. So at that time, I had met Ariel. I'm like, oh, we in this for real. So I took her on my wing, and we had the best time ever.
Ever.
Because, for one, it kind of gave me clout when everybody trying to be my friend, because I got the one thing they can't even get.
I saw you on the stage dancing with Neo. Oh, you did? What was you in the crowd?
For real, like, you know, the entire school year, I got bullied. I ain't gonna sit here and lie, I don't give a crap about it. But I knew when it came to Wild Splash time, I already knew who trying to be around me because, oh, yo, Ron, if you give me a pass, and I'm just like, I ain't got one. You know, even though I lied about it, because I already knew who I was gonna bring Ariel. So that entire day was so awesome because I wanted her to experience what I experienced. You know, I did it on my own one time, and I felt like, nah, I need to have somebody with me, because it kind of felt weird. I'm a 14, 15-year-old kid around all these adults and superstars. Yes. And, you know, like, how did I even get in this position?
Right.
You know? And I'm like, nah, like, I felt still introverted. Like, I was, you know, very shy to talk to people. I never was starstruck. You know, I wasn't the type, you know, to do the most to get attention or autograph or even let alone take a picture. I just knew that wasn't me, because most of these artists, that's all that they're used to. Now, I didn't want to be another representation of that. So I brought Ariel on board, and man, we who were stealing craft service from the trailers.
Yeah. Hey, you know me, I'm all about food now.
Man, I end up catching one of the artists taking a number two. I don't even gonna talk about who the artist was, but she was very popular. And I'm going to say she was a part of the Disney network back in the day.
At the number two.
Yeah, I was trying to get a Red Bull, and all of a sudden I hear, and I'm like, oh. Didn't even recognize the name on the trailer. I'm thinking the artist has gone to the next venue or gone home or whatever, but now she was probably in there relieving
us. Nature calls, man.
But luckily she didn't see me. But I was just like, oh God, I can't tell nobody this story. But hey, this is an exclusive.
Right, here we are.
Dropping bombs.
Right. Hell, I got elbowed by T.I. that one year. Remember when all them fans tried to jump the thing and then we had to run away? Bruh, I was like, this day is the bad, the worst.
I remember when you didn't meet Neo, you called him out to battle, and he punked out.
Yeah,
I didn't want to say it, but he punked out.
He punked out.
He was like, nah.
I did. You know,
she was up in there about to give him the business. Because
ain't no shame in my game. You know, closed mouths don't get fed. So I was like, I'm very confident in my dancing skills, and I just want to have a little, come on, man, a little duel. Let's do it.
Mind you, this is a 16-year-old, 17-year-old, whatever, and she trying to battle this dude. I was like, I just stood there. I minded my black ass business. I was like, nah, I ain't finna get in this one. But if he want to give the work and she trying to challenge her, I got to step in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he punked out. Love you, Neo, but I don't even know if you remember this, but I got the photo and I still got the pass. So that's all going to go up on the website for your viewing pleasure. But even that same event, we got to go on stage and dance with, at the time, them Franchise Boys. And they had this song called Lean With It, Rock With It. How do we even get that opportunity?
You know, my mom tells me this all the time. Favor ain't fair. It's not. Some have it, some don't. I'm just thankful to the Lord that I have it.
How do we even, if memory serves me correct, we were just on the side doing our thing with the song, and then I guess they saw us and they...
It's the energy, man. We was over there killing it. We don't care who's looking at us. We gonna kill it no matter what.
That's the thing.
You start dancing, I'm not finna like lower myself just because I'm on this side of the stage. No, I'm finna get in it.
Yeah, because for me... Like I said, Ariel was that catalyst for me to be myself. I love to dance no matter where I'm at, and I don't pay attention to who's watching. So all of a sudden, we're in the middle of the stage, and in the crowd is thousands of people. I've never seen that in my lifetime before. And I'm just, like, damn, we really in this. And I'm like, this is the only time I'll ever have a chance to kind of experience that magic. And I wouldn't say on a Michael Jackson level. Nah, I ain't talking about that. You know, I'm not having girls just passing out as soon as I step on stage. Nah. Mm. It's just the fact of you're on stage and there's a lot of people cheering you on and you hear the applause and the screams and you out there just killing it.
Right.
And we're high schoolers.
Right.
You know,
passing it to the left, to the right, slowing it down.
Right.
Slow-mo.
And then everyone was looking at us. We were getting
it.
And it was just like, how lucky are we to even not only just be there? You know, thank you, Mr. Bill Horn, for giving me opportunities year after year after year. Even after I graduated high school, he still looked out for me. But just that moment and to experience that with Ariel, I was just like, this was worth it. Mm-hmm. This was so worth it.
And then we go to school like nothing happened. Just like it was a regular old Saturday.
Right?
Like, yeah.
That's the thing. Like, I was able to turn it off, turn it in, because I didn't want that to, I wouldn't say be a product of me. I don't want people to know me just for that. So I just act like it never happened. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was another concert called The Last Damn Show, and we were trying to battle for ticket upgrades. And, oh, God, we didn't even get upgraded, did we? No, I remember we were doing everything. Like, we were just in that junk. And the people that we were battling, they were whack.
They were
whack. We out there doing everything. She done did the Matrix. She done did all this crazy stunt stuff. And we were trying to get like backstage passes or front row tickets or something.
Yeah.
We had tickets, but we wanted a better one. So they were like, all right, you're going to have to battle for it. So I'm like, man, we got this.
But right. Wasn't like, I think my dad and I were like driving around. He ended up stopping and winning those tickets.
See? Favor ain't fair.
It ain't, man. We just, you know, we'd have our daddy-daughter day. Every Thursday.
Oh, that's awesome.
We just do whatever, you know, whatever I wanted to do. And that's like awesome. He got, you know, got over the whole shyness of talking to people, because he would have me go to the mall. And he's like, okay, I want you to go in here and have a conversation with 5 people. And he's like, okay, the next time 10 people. I want you to just go and then come back and tell me exactly what you've learned from them.
Wow, how old were you?
14.
Oh, he put you in a social situation.
Oh, yeah. I had a lot of different social situations he put me in. And it helped me. Helped me a lot. How to talk to people, how to communicate with people.
What do you think he did that for? Like, the reason why behind it?
Honestly, I feel like it's just get me more comfortable with speaking with anybody. Because I don't care who you are. I can walk up to anybody and speak to them. No matter if I feel starstruck or anything. It's just I don't have a shyness about myself, because I know who I am and I'm confident whenever I speak to anybody.
Was that because of him?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Now, before that, were you very shy?
No, I wasn't shy, but I wasn't going up talking to strangers.
That's how you get smacked.
That's just how you get smacked. Yeah. But he definitely helped me with that. And also on the opposite end, you know, he would take me to the library. And we had lots of chill moments. And he was like, okay, I want you to go and find me 3 books. You know, find 3 spots in the book. And then come back and tell me exactly, you know, what do you think the book is about? And if you're going to check it out or anything. And we would check out books like every week and a half.
See, Black Fathers, Mr. Tony set a great example.
Oh, yeah, really the best.
He needs to write a book, because, dang, that really touched me. I wish my dad did. That's awesome.
Yeah. It was hard lessons and stuff, you know.
Do you think it made you a better person overall?
Oh, yeah. Because, like, while we had things like that, there were also rules. Like, I couldn't go and hang out at the mall with my friends when I became a teenager.
What was his reason for that?
He said that there's nothing but trouble that happens if you're going in there in the mall with your friends.
No money.
And for a while there, I didn't completely understand that. But then when I got older, I was like, you're absolutely right.
They're trying to boost stuff. They're trying to steal.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, I'm going in here to shop. Man. Shoplift.
Right? I had $20 and a bus pass. Only thing I can get from the mall was food from the food court.
Right, exactly. And, you know, and sometimes I didn't even have no money. Right. And I'm not finna sit around here and watch eat Auntie Anne's by yourself.
Check this out. You know the little samples they be giving?
Oh,
man,
yeah.
I went around them bad boy about 3 or 4 times.
Listen, that bourbon chicken lady was mad at me. Okay.
Orange chicken, bourbon chicken.
Yep.
Hey.
The A&W.
Yes. I mean, the struggle was real, but hey.
It was.
That was my experience.
It really was.
Man, good old times. So we're going to focus more on your turning point in life. I do understand that you were in the military. Could you describe your experience in that and what led you to going in there?
I made a promise to my mother when I was younger that because she wanted to go into the Air Force when she was younger, but no one pushed her in order to accomplish her goals and dreams. So I told her that I would go to the military for her. Of course, you know, your kid, you just say things. But My mom taught me that my word was my bond, and any promise I made to my mom, I tried my best to fulfill them. So I ended up joining the military, the Air Force, and I was a fire truck mechanic, and I worked on like heavy duty diesels and regular gas engines as well. So it was really nice. I was there for a little while until like they were trying to volunteer, but it's called voluntold. I was voluntold that I was going into Intel because they pretty much like found out that I took the ASVAB, but I just like bombed it so I can get this job because I love cars. But they were like, you're way more intelligent than you're leading on. And I was like, I'm out. I gotta go.
So is that why you got out? Was because?
Well, yeah, I was like, I've ended up having like Crohn's disease, and that was causing a little bit of issues with the stress and stuff of the job. So I ended up getting med boarded out of the military. So pretty much like medically retired.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm thankful because I knew that the Intel cross train was definitely going to be something different with the higher clearances and stuff. And I didn't want that Jason Bourne esque type of life. Gotcha. At all.
Now, were you diagnosed with Crohn's while in the military?
No. I think it was April 3rd, 2008 is when my Crohn's disease started, like, I guess, manifest itself in my body. That was when, like, I flatlined in the back of my mom's car. So that's why they call it my second birthday. But, wow. Yeah. But I ended up joining the military. And everything was, like, fine and good until I started having complications.
For those at home that don't know what Crohn's disease is, could you explain what it does to you and your body?
Yeah, it's an autoimmune disease or disorder where your GI tract, pretty much from your esophagus all the way down to your intestines and colon, can pretty much get inflamed or can tear, or the intestines can start eating itself. It's like I can't necessarily eat certain things, certain types of food, where my body just won't digest them. Like red meats and stuff like that, and sodas and lots of fried stuff. And
so, are you on a strict diet because of this?
Yeah, just fish. I eat a lot of fish. So I eat a lot of fish. No dairy. So everything is like a dairy substitute. Lots of vegetables. Anything that doesn't have dairy in it, I'm on it.
You do like alternate milks, like coconut milk.
Oh yeah, I live by Simply Almond. They're vanilla. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Give her a sponsorship.
Simply. Right, and holla at me. That and only what you need, protein from my muscles.
So is that how you got swole, big swole?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to need for them to cut you a check too.
Yeah, yeah. Please do. I would go around telling them how wonderful the stuff is and all the little things I eat, with their shakes. Some good stuff.
Now, are you a good cook, or is Cedric Alexander is her husband?
He's not a good cook. No, I mean, he can cook up some things, but overall, no, I'm like the cooker now.
Okay.
And even when we do cook now, we're like finally starting to cook. We did a lot of like ordering out. This pandemic's made us very lazy,
man. I could imagine.
But that's what happens. People don't like to admit certain things like that, but that's what makes us human. Like we've gotten pretty lazy, but now the cooking is definitely back up. Nice. But it's a little difficult because everybody eats something different in the house.
Yeah.
So I ended up, cooking the fish and like there's chicken and stuff like that. And I've just like reincorporated chicken into my diet. So it's like little small cutlets and stuff at a time.
Yeah.
I just need more protein. But
yeah,
I'm teaching him how to cook.
Hey.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotta learn.
Yeah, exactly. Them old ladies say, what you gonna do when I'm gone? I'm gone and you can't know how to boil water.
How you burnt boiling water?
How you burnt it? How the pot stick you?
Now, has Crohn's disease like affected your career in wrestling?
Completely. There have been years where I haven't even been able to take a bump. There have been years where I had to take off. Where I had to completely stop wrestling. Even while I was signed, there are times where, like in my own hubris, I was feeling better and everything. And sometimes when you feel better, you think everything's good. And then that's when everything pretty much goes bad. But sometimes the stress just gets so high. Like I can handle stress, but my body's natural like reaction to stress is active Crohn's. So it's nothing I can personally do about it. I can breathe through the stress and everything, but it's like it's still ticking, you know, the little bit of stress that kind of like makes it through. And, you know, so it does change things for me, but it also makes me push that much harder.
I could imagine just the drainage your body must go through, like those moments where it's very stressful. Mm-hmm. Like it must take a huge toll. And how do you, where do you get your courage from to keep going?
Honestly, it's my faith that keeps me going. I have to hold on to something, and why not be God's unchanging hand? You know, he's never really failed me ever. So I hold on to that and hold on to the fact that what I put out into the universe, what I think of all my, you know, my positive energy, you know, me being, you know, that kind of like people think that, you know, humans are like that celestial being. I am that, you know, ever forever moving energy spirit. Whatever I put my energy into, that's what I'm going to get back. So that's kind of what keeps me there, too, knowing that I am powerful enough to speak health in, into my existence, you know. So that kind of keeps me going as well. You know, just knowing it's about what I make it, all types of stuff.
I was asking my mom the other day, I was like, how did Flighty even become a wrestler? Well, Flighty, that's my mom's nickname for Ariel, because I remember... I don't know if I saw something on YouTube or something on Instagram, and all I see is this chick fly off of these rafters like a damn Power Ranger, tackling, like she's the only female in there, and she is murking these dudes. I'm like, that ain't Ariel. I mean, that looked like her, but that can't be her. Long and behold, it's this nut. So I'm like, when did she become a wrestler? Like, I know her husband, at the time they were dating, you know, he was, you know, trying to make his way through wrestling, but I didn't know that she took that as an interest as well. So what kind of made you decide to go into that? Was that another thing on your...
My checklist?
Yeah,
yes. Your checklist. This is the last thing on my checklist. And I was already dating Cedric, so I was like, I have to do this. This is just meant to be. And so I started, and kind of the rest of it was just history. And, you know, it's not until you give your 100, you know, your all into it is when you start really making it. And when I... kind of like quit my job. And
what were you doing before that?
I was working at GameStop. I went from like holiday hire all the way up to store manager. So yeah, I worked it.
GameStop cut her a check.
They did cut me a check, but you know I had haters at a GameStop. Isn't that crazy?
Why?
Man, the LP manager was best friends with another LP manager from Spencer's. And they wanted to hire me because I had quit GameStop, but they wouldn't give me a store. I was assistant manager for a long time.
Why wouldn't they give you a store?
And they were just hating. I just wanted it quick. I was within a year of being assistant manager. I was like, but I got this. Let me just have the store. And they wouldn't give it to me. So when the district manager left, I left with her to go to Spencer's, and they were upset. And the LP manager was like, you could be LP for Spencer's. You can totally do it, because I was really good at catching folks, and I was really good at doing the books, and I made sure that like all my percentages were low. I was about it.
Okay.
And when I went back to GameStop, like I had like the number 3 top selling store in all of GameStop. Yeah. So yeah, you know, won every like sales thing, all the other stuff, like the pre-orders. I won so many PlayStation 4s. Like I have them stacked in my house. It's crazy. I should probably just sell them. But I have so many like different versions of PlayStation 4 because I kept winning them. But yes, and he was just like a hater, and he was just like, oh, I gotta fire you for X, Y, and Z. And I was like, okay, that's fine.
Fire you for what?
Man, it was like a technicality. Like you could, if you find something outside, it's automatically yours, correct?
Finders keepers, losers suck.
Yeah, losers sweepers, right?
Well,
so, yeah. You know, yeah. So shmoney. So I ended up finding. I had someone. They found like this. Gift card outside or whatever. Now I'm outside. You know, I'm off the clock. I'm whatever. I'm gone. And they were like, oh, here you go. And I was like, oh, thanks. This gift card don't belong to nobody. This dude just found and he gave it to me, and I'm not even on the clock. I'm not even by the store or anything, But they were like, oh, still because it was company property. And I was like, okay, well, that's fine. I don't care. Yeah. It was weird. I was like, okay.
Something ain't clean about that, man.
Right. They were like, oh, we called the headquarters and they said to fire you, da-da-da-da. But the district manager, who was a friend of mine's, he ended up telling me later on that, no, the LP manager didn't call anybody. He just went outside and was like, I'm going to fire her for this. Even this is after I just fired, I had this other guy fired because he ended up was like taking in systems wrong so he can pocket the change, and I caught him. And I don't know if this man was a part of this, because I'm like, how are you the LP manager, but you didn't know that we just had like, it was like $100,000+.
He was embezzling money.
Yeah. And so of course I had to be out of there. So I was like, okay, whatever. And then the district manager was like, he's like, don't worry. He's like, one day you're going to look back on this. And he's like, I promise you. He's like, I know you're a woman of faith. He's like, don't worry. God's got you. You're not going to. This is not going to phase you.
And did, and does, yeah. And still do.
Yeah, and literally like a year later, like my husband ended up giving me like an Xbox One, and it came with like Fallout, which was like the game I bought with the money or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, full circle. Look at us. Six figures. I ended up like calling the district manager, and I was like, you are absolutely right. I'm out here living my best life. You know, I'm living my dream. Rustler. TV.
Becoming Big Swole, like what was the training process for that like?
Really just a lot of mental like situations where I would just sit down with a pen and pad and think about what I wanted my character to be. And I can't remember the guy's names, but I remember having this conversation, and he was telling me, he's like, your gimmick, your character, it's if you could find a way to just take yourself and turn it up to 1,000, then you're never playing a character. You're just yourself. He's like, it'd be so much easier for you. So I said, you know what? You're right. I'm just going to be me. And this is how I am. And some people, they don't think this is how I am all the time. I'm, you know, laughing and dancing and all that stuff and outlandish and everything. And I get a lot of flack for being loud. But I was like, I don't care. Like, closed mouths don't get fed. You know, silent people don't make no change. Like, so yeah, it just took some time. And then once I was around my friends, we had this joke about people getting swole, and they was like, oh, you getting a little swole out here, Ariel. I was like, you know, I'm big swole out here, you know, big swole. And then my friend's like, well, I'm little swole, and I'm medium swole, and everybody else was bigger than me. Yeah. So that was like the running gag, is that I'm the smallest, but I'm also the big swole. So I have a big personality and a swole mentality. So everything is like big in my life. Everything is grand.
I like that.
La negra tiene tumbao.
All right.
So
you went from Ariel Monroe to Big Swole.
Yes. I dropped the Ariel Monroe, just went straight to Big Swole. It was one of the best decisions.
Nice. What are some of the lessons that you learned about, I guess, the wrestling industry and still learning about to this day?
There's a lot about the wrestling industry that I didn't know. One, always have your gear with you. Never put it in a check bag, because you will lose it 100% of the time. Like, and next thing you know, you ain't got nothing to wear when you're wrestling.
Oh, wow.
So you always put it in your carry-on, never in your check-in bag.
Was that a mistake that you made?
Oh, hell no. Then someone told me that one time. I'm hard-headed with a lot of things, but when it comes to losing, like, clothes or something like that, no. Inconveniences, I don't do those. I try my best not to. Also, that in my mind and how I was taught is that there's wrestlers. There's some people who say, oh, there's women wrestlers and there's male wrestlers, and I'm like, no, there's wrestlers. You're either wrestler or you're not, you know. So don't get scared to get hit. If you are, maybe you shouldn't be a wrestler.
True. This is true. Mm-hmm. About the business of wrestling, what didn't you learn back then that you, I guess, now learn?
What to say without painting it in such a bad light?
Yeah, I don't want you to get any type of trouble contractually.
Man. Well, yeah, because it's just a lot of, like, you know, just there's a lot of negative sometimes when it comes to wrestling. It's sometimes, you know, with any sport or any fandom, it can get toxic. But I don't think there's anything beforehand, because coming in, I just knew to, you know, judge people by what they do.
Yeah.
And by what they say and their character and their intentions.
True.
You know.
That is so true. Now, when you got your AEW contract, did you have like a team behind you? Were you managed or are you self-managed?
No, self-managed. I didn't really have a team. I just had a group of people that was really excited for me to get signed. It was just a special night because it was in Charlotte, which I consider like my second home. And Arn Anderson, one of the Four Horsemen, he was on commentary. And it was against Sheeta. She was, I can't believe she was champion at the time. I don't believe she was. But I just knew that it was, what kept coming to my mind is that verse where it says that he will prepare a table before you in the presence of your enemies. Is because there were so many people in that audience who told me that I won't be able to make it, or I already have a black girl, why should I hire you, or you're nothing but Cedric's wife, you know, and they had to sit there and watch me succeed, you know, like it was just great. It was very full circle.
Take that, haters.
Right. Take that.
What does black representation mean to you in regards to that?
Everything. Growing up, I saw some people that looked like me because I'm on, you know, a little bit of the, I guess, lighter side. If you want to like get, you know, technical with it, but it means everything to me now again because of my daughter, you know, just having that representation where she's like, oh, this person looks like me, or without having that stigma of this is the stereotype of what black is, you know. It's just, I would like our people to be represented in every facet because we're mostly multifaceted people, we're multicultural people, and just something where you can look upon it with pride. Everybody wants that. That's just called being a human.
And why do you think there is a lack of black representation, I guess, in many different industries?
I feel like because the power is among others who aren't, this is not in a, I guess, not necessarily an important topic until it's a movement. Or until somebody else becomes a hashtag, you know? And it's no fault to them either, because, like, sometimes you can be in your own bubble, you know, and be like, oh, I'm not thinking about representation for X, Y, and Z, because that's not me. I don't affiliate with that. It doesn't resonate with me. But I feel like there are more people in power so used to seeing their part of their world represented instead of ours. When we have brothers and sisters in the room, you can tell because we're shown, because their stories are told. And it's something to say about the black experience is that no one else is going to know this experience except for us. No one's going to know exactly what, you know, that sneak whooping where you think you've made it. But it's late night and them covers get snatched off of you, you know, and it's you done, you know. Or you wake up in the morning and you hear either like some Earth, Wind, and Fire or some gospel. You hear some Shirley Caesar. Mm-hmm. Guess what you doing? You cleaning
up.
You cleaning up. Clean, like, up. You know, you already know what it is. You hear it loud. It's 9 a.m.
You think the lack of black and brown representation is, I guess, fear of what we can do or what we would become if we're given the same opportunities, platform, environment, resources?
I've heard of that notion where you don't want to boost, you don't want to boost up the mentality and the confidence of the black and brown people so they wouldn't just rise up in a sense. You want to keep them low. And I just pray that that's just not it. You know, I would like to say that, you know, no, that can't be the reason. But given how history has been and how it just continues to keep repeating itself and there's nothing new under the sun whatsoever, it's harder to keep that same, I don't want to call it a fantasy, but that sentiment, you know, be like, oh, you don't want to hold us down, but we can't get the opportunities either. And, you know, it's just a lot of back and forth, a lot of input from a lot of different other places where you're like, okay, no, you shouldn't be speaking at all because you're not an expert on this.
For me, in my, I guess, insight and outlook is when we do try to do our own thing, or we're like, okay, you don't want to vibe with this, and we do our own thing, they try to steal it from us. Or it only becomes important to them when it gains popularity. Because in the beginning, you didn't believe in it. You didn't believe in this, and you thought it was stupid. But now you see other people rock with it, and now you want a piece of it. And when we say no, you steal. And then you get even more.
Or sabotage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, the Holocaust of Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And there's others. But we had our own businesses. We had our own bus line, subway station.
Was it Seneca Village or something like that? Seneca Village for Central Park?
That part.
Yes, I can't remember exactly the pronunciation.
Yeah, it was projects, I think, right? And once again, we try to do our own thing. Like, I'm not trying to talk down or shame any other ethnicities or cultures or races, but it's been proven. Like, even with my own experience, I had people in the beginning like, oh, you can't make that happen, or giving me any type of negative flack or the what ifs. And I'm like, I don't want to hear that. I know X, Y, and Z, it's expensive. I know the pros and cons, but let me just do this, because at the end of the day, if I don't execute this idea, all it's going to be is an idea. And we all have great ideas, but it's all about execution. And for me, I wanted to be able to say I did something unique that no one else was able to do. And then once it became popular, then all those same people, you know,
naysayers,
you know, they of course they won't acknowledge that, you know, they messed up or they were wrong about you. They just look from a side, but they still look. You know, I have a problem is that when we try to do our own thing and it gets stolen, and when we talk about it, we're deemed as crazy. Oh, why are you making it a race thing? Because for me, it is a race thing. Because...
Perfect examples, like Living Single versus Friends. The timeline has debated this thing so many times. It's ridiculous. It's like every couple months people find out that Friends was like stolen material. like come on,
there was no Black folks in New York in Friends,
or like the fact that UPN we boosted that channel, the next thing you know it was just
Unpaid Negroes Network.
As you know, it's just overrun.
Underpaid Negroes, I'm sorry. That's what UPN was.
Yeah,
like we ran UPN. What was on that? Sister, Smart Guy, Moesha, Malcolm and Eddie, Girlfriends. Yeah, there was a slew of popular TV shows, and once
the ratings went up, and the next thing you know, the channel was now changed.
Yeah, but where are the residuals for that? But you can still see Friends to this day, and them people still getting checks. Mm-hmm. Keep that same energy for all these other shows, but representation matters. And I wanted to ask you, have you made any mistakes in the wrestling industry that have made you laugh today? Or like in life, they like, dang, why did I do that? But you know what? Whatever, I'll laugh about it.
Let's see. I want to say any mistakes. Not any mistakes that's made me laugh. I've had a bunch of, I guess, mistakes that's made me like, okay, let me change this course or do this different. But I'll tell you what, dyeing my hair all those different colors was definitely a mistake.
Somebody had like the red and the green.
Oh man, and the green. Oh, it was so much. It was so difficult to upkeep. Now, mind you, the green was really initially just for the wedding. He wanted me to have green hair for the wedding because he's like, oh, I think it'd be hot and sexy for you to get this green hair. But the upkeep and the flat iron and how under my nails was always green, I just couldn't stand it.
Love that Joker.
Right. So I guess that does make me laugh.
Yeah.
Man, yeah. Walking around looking like a gangrene and stuff. All over the place where I was turning into fucking
Green
turning
Lantern.
Into croc.
I have one more thing before we get out of here. I know, you know, you're on a crazy schedule. Back in the day, we used to quote movies all the time. Let's play a quick game of reciting our favorite movie. quotes.
Oh, no. Okay.
Which one do you want to choose from? House Party 3?
Oh, no.
Or The Jacksons and American Dream?
Oh.
What's your favorite movie, period, to quote?
My favorite movie, period, is The Five Heartbeats.
That's you ain't going to get it because you ain't got it.
You want my, you want my spot flash?
You
want my
spot? You ain't going to get it because you ain't got it.
Listen.
Oh, and people don't know that Angela Bassett is related to Ariel, and it's funny. Because not only did we quote the Jacksons in American Dream that she was in. No, I got it pulled up. Wait. I had the entire dialogue. Which one you want to be? You want to be Joseph? You want to be Catherine?
Wait.
I'm sorry. I know we're backtracking, but okay. We actually tried to go to Havenhurst when we did my L.A. event. We were trying to find a Jacksons family compound.
Yeah, and we I remember find it.
We did, but it was the front gate.
It was the front, yeah.
And I remember on the caption... I think Ariel wrote, LaToya left the towel in the swimming pool.
Yes. Who left the towel in the swimming
pool? Michael!
Tito! Who left the towel in the pool? You gonna get it?
Joseph, you gonna wake the dead.
You gonna wake the dead.
Here it is. She's like, the boy's a young man now. They have traveled all over the world. They have millions of fans. What you gonna do? Ask them to go out, get a switch so you can beat them with it? Go to bed, Joseph. Go to bed.
Oh my gosh.
What I tell you, Angela Bassett has the most iconic movie quotes.
She does. Listen, between that and What's Love Got to Do with It, honey.
Now you know you need an ass whooping.
I'm sorry. I got. What you
gonna do?
Fire your ass. Oh my gosh.
My favorite part. And everyone knows this is the Temptations miniseries. When I guess Otis and David Ruffin are going back and forth, and Otis was like, they're coming to see the Temptations.
They're coming to see.
David Ruffin says,
they're coming to see. They're coming to see me.
They're coming to see the Temptations. Ain't nobody coming to see you, Otis. Man, when I tell you, I felt that when I was a kid.
You just group in search for David Ruffin. Matter of fact, they should call the group David Ruffin and the Temptations.
Man.
Yeah.
And when I found out that part scripted, that Leon ad-libbed that part.
David Ruffin and the Temptations.
What did he say? Yeah, I have it. Here it is. He was like, you wish you could work the way I do, but you can't. Because there's only one David Ruffin. Without him, Temps ain't nothing but a group in search of a David Ruffin. Matter of fact, I've been thinking we should call the group David Ruffin and the Temptations. Yeah, that sounds good to me. Y'all begging me not to leave you, and I refuse
to let you go. Yeah.
David Ruffin and Temptations. What you think? Man. Oh, I got
it. Man, which is funny because Otis is the last Temptation alive, so I guess
he's still alive? No disrespect. He's still alive?
He's still alive.
Hey. God, look out for that man. Because we losing black folks left and right.
Right. I tell you what, if he go on tour, better everybody come to see him.
You know what? I can't with you. I got one last movie quote, and we're going to get up out of here. This is from House Party 3. The scene where the boys are having kids' bachelor party at the house, and Lucy's upstairs.
Lucy.
Which one? You want to be immature, or you want to be Aunt Lucy?
Aunt Lucy.
She was like, what's all that noise downstairs? A few of the fellas came by for kids' bachelor party. What about this movie?
What about this movie you brought me?
Oh, that was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, Aunt Lucy.
They ain't no turtles. That's ass. Aunt Lucy.
I'm sitting here at kids' bachelor party eating popcorn and watching that ass. Man.
Yo, Aunt Lucy. I thought she was going to take me to number house party too.
Which one? What party? Like,
oh, now I remember your name.
Oh, no, that's part three. But
that is part three.
The dinner at in-laws.
Yeah, the dinner at the in-laws.
She
yeah.
was like, oh, I know you from. Oh, back in the day, your wife, you already know about it.
They used to call your job on.
That's my hoe. I mean, my wife you talking about.
So good.
Man.
All those movies are so good, so quotable.
These kids don't know, man. Those movies were classics. I mean.
Big Red, Shy Guy.
Man. But hey, I mean, at least they have White Chicks. That's still a classic. But shit, White Chicks is almost 20 years old.
So yeah, it's old. What?
White Chicks is almost 20 years old. I know this is music, but Britney Spears' I'm a Slave for You is 20 years old.
Like that. Feeling like talking, feeling like dancing. When I see this guy, it's practical, it's logical.
I can't even do it.
I can't.
Like, how does she
get it?
Like, how does she prepare herself to do these vocals in the studio? Like, what is her right? All right, Brittany, we're gonna do this take, but I just want you to breathe. Yeah, just breathe into the mic. Okay, and we're gonna need you to be like a baby. So do like a goo goo gaga type of.
Yeah. I love her. Oh my gosh.
Free Britney. Free Britney, bitch.
So awesome.
I love Britney.
You want a hot body?
You better work, bitch.
Right.
What she say? You want a hot body? You want a Maserati?
You want a Maserati? You want to live fancy? Party in big mansions?
It's Britney, bitch. Yeah.
Exactly. Who else is coming out there with the If You See Kami? Come on. That was a bop. Let's go.
Very simple.
And circus. Because there's only two types of people in the world. The ones that entertain, the ones that observe.
Okay. Let's just say this. Blackout was her best album.
Blackout was great.
No tour.
Mm-mm.
When I first heard Gimme More, the intro alone had me sold. When I heard It's Britney, Bitch, that was her black album.
I see you.
Right?
She said, I was like, yes, gone, girl.
Let me just say this also about Britney Spears. Some of her best songs were R&B remixes.
Mm-hmm.
Boys.
I was just about to do it. Yeah.
Overprotected, Dark Child remix.
Yep.
All her best shit has been by.
Say hello.
Man. No one can take that away from Britney Jean Spears.
Right.
But it has been a pleasure having this conversation with you. I don't want to call you Big Swole because I don't call you that. I'm going to call
you please.
That.
Everybody calls me Big Swole. Everybody calls me either Swole or something like that. And I don't hear my name often at all. It's so crazy.
Okay, then what's the name on the check that they cut you?
Ariel.
Exactly.
That part.
I'm going to call it Erica. That's what my mama named her.
Right. Mm-hmm. Say what? Say huh? I like that.
Oh, yeah. She finna drop an album.
Bruh.
I don't want to drop any like hints, but you know, it's Litty Titty.
Litty Titty.
I know you effing lying.
I know you effing lying.
We got snacks. Mm-hmm. And we need another record. So if those who are listening got any ideas, I wouldn't say cut you a check, but we'll give you some credit for it.
Right. I'll put you in a verse or something.
Right? Put you in a video, out release party, something.
Something like that. You know, they don't even do those no more. I mean, I'm going to do one.
Well, Kanye did one, but he did like a big concert.
No, Kanye did
this. Kanye on some demonic shit.
No, Kanye did a spiritual sacrifice.
Pretty much, that was a ritual. Kanye tried to take everybody to hell with him, but I'm saved by the blood of Jesus.
I seen Jennifer's body. You ain't finna do me like this.
Man, it has been an absolute pleasure with you, Ariel, a.k.a. Big Swole. Where can your followers or people listening for the first time find you?
I am on Twitter at Swole World, Swole World, and on Instagram at Da, Big Swole. Boom. That's where you can find me on Instagram. You find me on YouTube, Big Swole. Just type in that, and I will pop up.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Before we head out, do you want to say anything to your followers or your fans or anyone that just supports Big Swole?
I would just like to say, keep moving, keep striving, keep smiling. Remember, it's discipline over motivation, and can't shouldn't be in your vocabulary. And what people think of you is none of your concern.
Amen.
Amen.
Well, this has been a great first episode of the Lame Podcast, where we laugh at my experiences, and hopefully you laugh with us and also learn from our mistakes. Until then, I am Rodney Jr.